This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Coming up over the next hour, we'll be looking ahead to England's 1,000th game tonight. It is at Wembley against Montenegro. England know 1 point, actually, will secure qualification for next year's Euro. So plenty to preview there, looking at team news, whether the Raheem Sterling dropping will have any long-lasting impact on his relationship with Gareth Southgate, who he's admitted is probably upset by being dropped. We'll be getting a few perspectives from a few former England players. Obviously, it's a great night for English football, remembering the highs and many lows of English football over the years. We'll also be talking a little bit about Everton later in the hour, as well as talking about our memories of England, good and bad. I'm sure for many people of sort of my generation, it is more the latter than the former. And also talking about potentially our England 11s for tonight. I think there's a general consensus as to what the 11 might be, the likely lineup. What sort of 11 would we go for? Remember, you can get in touch with us here on the Premier League Fan Show. Call us on 0208 70 20 558. We're on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram at Love Sport Radio. We are also on WhatsApp, so make sure you get in touch with us here at the Premier League Fan Show. So as I said, it's a big night for English football for two reasons, really. One, England know that they're just 1 point away from qualification for next year's Euros, as well as the fact that it is the 1,000th game. Plenty of former players will be there, former managers will be at Wembley to celebrate the occasion tonight. To look ahead to the game and tonight, I'm delighted to say we're joined by Nick Masheter, Midlands football writer for the PA. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Nick. As I mentioned, it's a big occasion for England. What are you feeling going into tonight? Because obviously when you get to this sort of a milestone, you think back to good and bad memories. What's your kind of longest or best memory and perhaps your worst memory of supporting and following England over the years?
Oh, crikey. Year 96 was pretty good, wasn't it? You know, remember the Scotland game. I remember more David Seaman's penalty save from Gary McAllister more than I do Gazza's goal from that game, actually. The Colombia penalty shootout in the last summer was pretty good. And then, yeah, sort of worst Euro 96 penalty shootout defeat to Germany. I think that was pretty galling. But, I don't think you'd be able to top that in terms of worst feeling.
Obviously, this week, Nick, has been dominated by the Raheem Sterling, Joe Gomez altercation. Obviously, Southgate's been firm in his opinion of dropping Sterling for tonight's game. Do you think that there's a risk that could overshadow tonight's fixture? Obviously, number one, England have got a job to do on the field to secure qualification. But on a night like tonight, celebrating 1,000 games, do you think there's any risk that more of the talk will be about what happened in the training ground incident early this week than the milestone?
Yes and no. You know, Gareth has been swift and decisive. You know, he's made his mind up, and the fact that Sterling won't be on the pitch, while that will be sort of pre-match talk and probably a little bit post-match as well, I imagine, it won't distract from the actual game itself, because they won't be talking about him while he's on the pitch and in the context of what happened. So I think Gareth needs to be applauded for, as I said, sort of swift and decisive action. It was always going to be, it was always going to split people. People always say, well, why did you do that? Could you handle it differently? But it's not something that they would have wanted on the sort of the eve of this game. But show me a club or a country who hasn't had an incident or problems like this in the past. I think, just because it's got out doesn't mean it doesn't happen anywhere else.
Gareth Southgate admitted yesterday that inevitably Raheem Sterling was upset, as any footballer would, missing a game, especially kind of this milestone night for England. Do you think there's a risk that this will have a long-lasting kind of detrimental impact on their relationship, or do you think the fact that Southgate has already said that Sterling will play in Sunday's game against Kosovo shows that this is a kind of a one-off incident, Southgate has punished him for it, and that they draw the line and they move on from this?
Yeah, you've got to move on. Otherwise, you know, how will you be able to move on? You can't let things linger. You can't let it fester. I think, you know, we've seen over the last 3 years, you know, the atmosphere that Gareth has fostered around that camp. This is a blip. It's not the rule or anything like that. So I think it'll be done. There's no sense of them letting it linger or dragging it out. I think they're both professional. Everybody in that squad is an adult as well. I think it's draw the line, move on, and hopefully look forward to the summer.
Before we talk about matters on the field in terms of team selection, Nick, I wanted to get your views on where England currently are at under Gareth Southgate, because there have been some really good moments. You think of winning away in Spain was a terrific first half performance, in particular winning that game at Wembley against Croatia to get through to the Nations League semi-finals, one of the kind of really best atmospheres, to be honest, there's been at Wembley for a number of years, getting to a World Cup semi-final. There's been other times, in particular in recent months, where defensively England have been a bit all over the place, some negative results like that 2-1 defeat over at the Czech Republic. Where do you think England are at, especially with, and we would assume England will qualify tonight if they get even a point, where are they at going into next year's Euros?
I think they're in a very good position. I think, you know, when you look at maybe some of the apathy that surrounded Gareth's appointment, nobody would have expected them to get to the World Cup semi-final, or indeed at some point, certainly very, very late on in the campaign, the Nations League finals. So they have made strides. You know, they hadn't got to a World Cup semi-final since 1990. Prior to that, so he's outstripped on paper more qualified managers than him who have had the job previously. There is a, regardless of what happens between Sterling and Gomez, there is a better atmosphere around the England camp, around St George's Park. They are in a better position, a much better position than when he took over. That is for sure, and I think. You look at the development, obviously this, you know, this credit needs to go to clubs and club managers, the development of Kane and Sterling and the emergence of Alexander-Arnold and players like that. They will rightfully, I think, be one of the favourites of the tournament next year, should they qualify, which really they should do.
Let's look at team selection then, some of the big decisions that Gareth Southgate's got to make. It's in particular for me the midfield, where there's been a lot of debate, especially during the last couple of international breaks, people feeling like Gareth Southgate's perhaps gone a bit too defensive, going with two holding midfielders. Now, Jordan Henderson is suspended for tonight's game. The general consensus, the likely lineups that you see around the media, seem to suggest it will be a midfield three of Declan Rice, Harry Winks and Mason Mount. In my view, this is a great opportunity to potentially play two attacking midfielders. And in my view, that would be Maddison and Mount, the form of both those players at the start of this season. If it were up to you, Nick, how would you approach selection in that midfield for England tonight?
It's England, whatever midfield England put out, they should win, and that should be a given, really. I wouldn't play it too much differently. Look, I think I've said before they've got an identity. They've got a system. Why necessarily deviate from that system when you still need to get that point to qualify? And a win will obviously do it wholeheartedly. But, you know, why tinker with something when there's still something just on the line? So I think, you know, in Kosovo, should they get the result that they need against Montenegro, Kosovo, maybe then you can change it up. But while there is still something on the line and they need to get the job done, then I don't think there's any need for kind of experimentation or deviating from kind of the A plan, so to speak, at the minute.
I'm sure there'll also be debate, Nick, about the makeup of the back four. Over the last few months, there's been a little bit of a worrying trend of England making silly individual errors, conceding quite a volume of goals, actually, over the last few months. How would you expect Gareth Southgate to go in terms of his back four selection tonight?
I think Harry Maguire is a given at the minute, isn't he? You're building the defence around him. We've seen Stones obviously come back after injury. Tyrone Mings has done well. obviously in difficult circumstances in Bulgaria and has done well for Aston Villa this season. So I wouldn't be surprised with a back four of Alexander-Arnold, Maguire, Mings, Chilwell. That would probably be the obvious choice for me at the minute.
And just finally then, Nick, obviously on a night like tonight, we're expecting him to win pretty easily. Montenegro, you go through their players, not exactly full of players that people will know of, that they're struggling in the group, looking like it should be a very easy win. So what's, I suppose, a success from tonight? Obviously, qualification is up for grabs for England tonight, but what would you regard as a positive step forward in a game that many would expect England to win easily?
Yeah, I think that's always the question. I mean, England are expected to win some of these games against the sort of lesser nations, and they're expected to do it handsomely. It's always about the manner of the victory, not necessarily the victory itself or the result itself. So that's possibly something that we need to get away from a little bit. If they get the job done tonight and it's a 1-0 win, and it's not if they get the job done on a Thursday, and it's not the most inspiring of victories, they've still got the job done. They still qualified for the European Championships. So, that's the target all along. Yeah, you want to be playing expansive football. You want to be scoring 4, 5, and 6 goals, which they have done, which they did do in Bulgaria. But I think first of all, it is getting the job done, and then maybe sort of opening up a little bit and being able to sort of showcase the talent even more. So, would you expect them to win? Yes, but we've seen in the past that it's not always easy as that. This England squad have got the talent and the ability to put goals past teams, as we've seen over the last 18 months or so. But if they get a 1-0 win, and it's a little bit scrappy, but they get the job done, that should be the success.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Nick. That was Nick Masheter, Midlands football writer for the PA, looking ahead to England's 1,000th game tonight. It is against Montenegro at home at Wembley, knowing that just 1 point will secure qualification, obviously, to the Euros next year. Not only would it be expecting England to get a point, we would expect them to get all three. In the general consensus in terms of a likely lineup for tonight is Jordan Pickford in goal, Trent Alexander-Arnold, John Stones, Harry Maguire and Ben Chilwell across the back, Declan Rice, Harry Winks and Mason Mount in midfield, Jadon Sancho, Harry Kane and Marcus Rashford up front. So we'll be debating that as the hour goes along. Is that the right sort of lineup? If not, which changes would you make? And it feels like a clean sheet more than anything actually is really important for England tonight. They've conceded silly goals, loads of really awful goals over the last couple of months. And maybe just getting a bit of a defensive confidence back, a clean sheet would do a lot of those players a whole world of good. So we're going to be continuing to preview this big game tonight for England, more so the fact that it's their 1,000th game rather than a game against Montenegro, who aren't exactly the toughest opponents, but we'll be back after this.
Love Sport.
So we're going to continue to look ahead to England's game tonight, a pretty big one. Obviously, they know that 1 point will secure qualification for next year's Euros, but more importantly, 1,000 games for England. There's been more lows than there have been highs, especially over the last 20 years. England underachieving. The last couple of years have been better since Roy Hodgson went. So things are starting to look up a little bit. As I mentioned, England play Montenegro knowing that 1 point, although they should be getting 3 points pretty easily, 1 point will be enough to secure qualification for the 2020 Euros. So obviously we've been previewing it all morning and into the afternoon, and earlier on, the Breakfast Show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's. They were joined by the former England and Southampton striker Mick Shannon. They were discussing England's game tonight, as well as a little bit of a chat about what's going on at Southampton at the moment.
Well, obviously, they only need a point, don't they? You know, I mean, it should be a formality, but they said that again, you know, when we played Poland a few years back, you know, yeah. Well, a long time ago, you know, but so there's no gimmies in this game, and you know, they've got to go and get the result, haven't they?
Yeah. Do you think that all the issues, you know, going on behind the scenes, the whole Raheem Sterling thing, do you think that'll have much of an impact on the players?
Nah, ridiculous. It should never have come to the press. You know, what happens in the dressing room stays in the dressing room, and what happens on the pitch stays on the pitch. I mean, it's you know, it's just, geez, people have rows and arguments. But I've been in dressing rooms when we've had fights and, you know, you've had to separate people. But it stays there. It's not what the public want to see. They want to see their best players play. I can't believe the managers, you know, I don't know if he's done it for, I don't know. I don't know why he's done it. I mean, you play your best team, don't you? If they have a row, I mean, Jesus Christ, your shows are a bit passionate and they want to win.
Yeah, no,
I've never found that a problem.
Fair point. Obviously, you played a lot for England. So does this mean anything to you necessarily, the fact that we're at 1,000 games? You were involved in so many yourself?
Well, no, I saw this morning that it was 1,000 games. But, I mean, it's just part of the history of the sport, isn't it? You know, and, the press, everybody's looking for a bit of copy to fill out space and that. I think it's just one of those things. It's 1,000 games, great, you know what I mean? And, you know, and long may it'll go on forever, let's hope, you know? And, football's been a great sort of sport that brings a lot of people together and, brings the world together almost, doesn't it? So, and long may it continue, really.
Yeah, and we're reading now, because obviously the FA are planning, you know, quite a large deal really over this 1,000th game. There's going to be all the great and the good from yesteryear that are there, and but Peter Beardsley has not been sent an invitation. This is in relation to obviously some of the incidents that took place when he was as a youth coach at Newcastle. Do you think that's the right decision to just keep him away for now?
Listen, Peter Beardsley is a lovely man, let me tell you. You know, yes, anyone can sort of just make gaffes, and the politicians are making them all the time, and we seem to forgive them. You know, I mean, I think it's just a very childish thing to do. I mean, he was a big part. Anyone, whatever celebration, he's part of the England team for a few years, and I think it's very childish and very, silly, really. I mean, it shouldn't happen, should it?
No, indeed. Just looking back over, I suppose, England's history and touch on a couple of games you played. You mentioned the infamous Poland game, but of course so many positive memories for yourself and some of the goals you scored, Scotland, Bracelet Wales, etc. Is there any games for you that stand out, whether it's games you've played or elsewhere?
Well, I suppose the game against Poland is the one that stands out. It's a game. We didn't lose. We drew, but, you know, we had to win, you know, and yeah.
The goalkeeper was fantastic, wasn't he?
The goalkeeper, yeah, Tomaszewski and Brian Clough, you know, was in his element. That, you know, called him a clown, and it was the beginning probably of television and panels and everything else that was coming to light in them days, wasn't it? You know, and it's made football probably what it is today. It keeps getting bigger and there's more money involved and everything else. But, you know, as I said, it should be about football and not about the bits and pieces that go on around the game, you know? I mean, with the problems they had in the last game, England and what have you, you know, we want to get on with the football, and most people do anyway. That's what they want to watch. And, you know, not all the players arguing and what have you. That happens. People argue. People disagree. Just get on with it.
Well, we do it every single day in the studio, you know.
Well, I hope you do. You know, at least you're passionate and you're doing things that you want, trying to get your own view across.
Exactly. Good lad. Just on a footballing, purely footballing sense, this England team, this current squad, where do they rank for you among some of the better England sides? Do you think they've got potential? Maybe we could, at some point with this lot, get a repeat of 1966.
Yeah, I think we've got the talent. The individuals have got the talent. It's the old story with England. We don't seem to be able to put a team together, you know. He's tried very hard, as Gareth Southgate, to put a team together. But you need those flair players. You know, who wants to watch England without Raheem Sterling, for example? I mean, get a life. Let's sit. You know, it's like George Best sitting on the bench and not me. In my day, you know what I'm trying to say is, you went to see them players. You want to see those players play. You don't want to see Joe Bloggs, who will probably have one game for England and then not be seen again. You know, I mean, that's the way I see it. You know, and I think that we've become very narrow-minded, and we want people to be the perfect human being. And you know, I mean, it's unfortunately, they don't exist, you know.
Very true. I want to touch on Southampton. Of course, you played so many games. Was it 500 or so for Southampton? Not going particularly well this season.
No.
Do you keep a close eye on them? What's your thoughts on Hasenhüttl?
Southampton, I mean, you know, I mean, what's going on? I mean, you can't keep doing what Southampton have done. Let's get things straight. This has not just happened this season. You know, they've been selling their best players for the last, you know, 10, 15 years. And, you know, all of a sudden, you've got to go out and replace them. And you can't just replace them like that, you know. When you see the players that they've lost, you know, and it's not one, it's not once every 4 or 5 years. This is every year. As soon as Southampton get a good player, they get ripped away. And all right, they say there's some Chinese people come in with some money. Southampton still haven't got any money. You know, Norwich's and Burnley's have done the right thing. They've held things together. Southampton have tried to compete and, you know, buy players, and they're not buying the players that are any good.
Can they
survive? They're going to go up and down, and I mean that's what makes the Premiership what it is. You know, there's going to be a fresh team, three fresh teams come in every year. I mean, I fear for them. I think they're struggling, but there's a lot of people there, trying to make the job work, and it's very difficult when you keep losing. The FA have got to sort of, I mean, a bit like the American system. You need where players are. Otherwise, football is just getting, you know, your Arsenals and not your Arsenals, your Liverpools and your Man Cities and your Man Uniteds and possibly Arsenal. Your four best clubs are going to have all the best players every year.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I think that you've got to look to do it. You go back to when I was playing and every team had one or two good players and every team could beat each other. Now that doesn't happen, you know.
Yeah.
You might get it one team, you know, like Leicester come on and they can beat everybody for a season and then, you know, they'll go off again and, you know, but those big clubs are really, they're the bullies, you know what I'm saying? You talk about bullying, I mean, that's what those big clubs are doing.
Well, they've got, I mean, the amount of quality that's walked in and then out of Southampton, you know, you've got the likes of Luke Shaw's, Virgil van Dijk's and all these people.
Well, Mane, you look at the centre-half.
Oxlade-Chamberlain, Morgan, Schneiderlin, Lallana. You know, they've got a title-winning team there. Yeah, Walcott, well, they've got a title-winning team if they manage to keep hold of some of these players. And they let them go.
But what I'm trying to say, they can't afford to keep them, see? Yeah. I mean, this is where the money is taken over. You know, the massive egos of the Arab owners at Man City and the people at Liverpool, the American owners, whoever it is, if you throw enough money at it, invariably you're gonna make it work. And is that good for the sport? You know,
this is Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us, call us on 0208 70 20 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We're going to be turning our attention back into the Premier League and talk all things Everton now. So as I say, we're joined by Tony Scott, matchday digital reporter for the Liverpool Echo. Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Tony. Last time out, the last result before the international break for Everton, it felt like a crucial one for them, a 2-1 away win at Southampton, where both managers were seemingly under the spotlight. How important a result was it, not just for Everton, but for the manager, Marco Silva?
Yeah, it was crucial. A big, big 3 points it was for Everton indeed. Huge pressure now off Marco Silva. But, you know, what the nature of the beast is in the Premier League now. There's a game coming up in, 10 days' time against Norwich at home, where Everton will be looking to put back-to-back wins for the first time in a long while, where they can arguably go into the top six. So it just shows you how compact it is in the Premier League at the moment, and two wins on the spin can catapult you from the bottom three to the top six. So I think the next manager could be under pressure as a case of Southampton. They were under pressure now. It's like in sync into the bottom three. So I think it was huge, huge 3 points for Everton. And it was well deserved, the performance. They played really well and could have won by a lot more in the end.
Do you think even after winning that game, Tony, that the pressure's off Marco Silva? We're in an environment nowadays in the Premier League where seemingly most managers at any one point are under pressure. There's as many as potentially 6 or 7 that people could argue could lose their jobs in the next few months. Do you think that the pressure is still right on Marco Silva, or do you think that there's still the faith from the Everton owners in Silva?
I think what's biding his time? He's Everton in a big quarter-final match against Leicester coming up in a couple of weeks' time, and I think that's the game which could defy Everton's season. I think if you were to ask the majority of Everton fans at the moment, would you take 16th, 17th place, and a League Cup win did bite your hands off at that. So I think that's the important one for Everton. In terms of league positions, you've got to get back up there and in the mix of the top six. But the fundamental problem for Everton has been for a long while has been the lack of silverware. We're talking 25 years here without silverware at Goodison Park. That's the longest in the club's history. Now, even the Arsenal stated as the fourth most successful club in England, yet they haven't won a trophy in English football for a long while. So I think it's important that Marco Silva has identified the League Cup as a priority this season when previous managers in the past have dished it out. The likes of Ronald Koeman, Roberto Martinez, David Moyes, they didn't take this cup seriously. Marco Silva has, and it's just going to show that it can bide your time if you get the league results along the way.
Interestingly, team selection-wise for Everton over the last few games, Michael Keane has lost his place in the starting 11. He's also been left out of the England squad. Where do you think he's at? Because obviously he made that big money move from Burnley for £30 million a couple of years ago and hasn't really kicked on from where he was then. So where is he at with his Everton career? And do you think that Marco Silva's made the right decision by taking him out of the starting 11 at the moment?
Yeah, I think he took him out of the firing line, and rightly so. Arguably, Michael Keane was one of Everton's better players last season, believe it or not. But this season, he is a confidence player, and he has suffered some terrible mistakes at club level and on to international level, as we've all seen against Kosovo for England there. So I think he is a confidence player. He'll have to listen, watch, and basically wait his turn, because Mason Holgate has provided really some sterling performances at the back alongside Yerry Mina. So he'll have to wait his time, wait for an injury to occur or a suspension, as we can easily see what can happen in Premier League football, and then stake his claim once more. So I think he's going to wait. And it may be a blessing in disguise that he can sit there and watch and maybe learn a lot more than what you do actually playing.
Also interesting to see at the back that Jibril Sidibe is currently starting at right back. Do you think that Marco Silva is testing the waters, seeing who perhaps fits better, giving both Sidibe and Seamus Coleman the opportunity? Or is it a case of Sidibe might have overtaken Seamus Coleman?
No, I think Sidibe has taken over Seamus Coleman now. I think the majority of Everton fans over the past 12 months have seen Coleman deteriorate in terms of performances. And not you can't question the lad's effort. He's been a fantastic captain for Everton in recent years. He's been a great servant for the football club. But what you're looking for is from your right back and your left back, looking for 7 and 8 out of 10 performances every week, and it just simply hasn't happened. The injury, it looks as though it has made a detrimental effect on Coleman's performances of late, and before you know it, Sidibe had to come in at right back, and he's provided some really good performances. So I think it's a changing of the guard of Everton. If you were to ask the majority of people outside of Merseyside, you could name Everton's back four quite easy over the last couple of years. Now it is a change in the guard. You've got Lucas Digne has overtaken Leighton Baines, and now you've got Sidibe has overtaken Seamus Coleman. So I think that's the sign of the times now where we live in there. Two really good servants now are serving the time on the bench.
One of the emerging stories, Tony, over the last few days from Everton is that of Moise Kean. Now, he was left out of the matchday squad against Southampton for being late for a second time. Now, there were rumours that were emerging even last month, only a couple of months after he had signed, linking him with a move back to Italy. He hasn't necessarily featured that much under Marco Silva. Do you find this quite a strange situation that obviously Marco Silva was at the helm? It wasn't like a former manager had signed him and then he took them over and then thought he's not my cup of tea. What do you think's going on here, and do you think that there's going to be a positive ending at Everton, or is it a case of it may be that they might have to cut their losses much sooner than they would have thought?
I think it could be a latter, to be honest. I think Everton took a gamble in the summer by signing this golden boy, so to speak, with Juventus. And it looked all good, fantastic business, didn't it, in the summer? Then we all seen how well he had done on Champions League level and for Juventus and at international level with Italy. But as we've seen, it just hasn't settled for him. He's a young boy. He's in a new country. He's learning the language. And it's proven really difficult for him. He's had some really poor disciplinary issues that we've seen at international level and at club level. So that can't continue. And Marco Silva had to make a statement of intent by telling him that he will be fined. He had to apologise to the players. And that's what you have to do. So I think it could be, maybe it's just an EGF reaction at the moment, but I think it could be a part of the ways maybe in January with a loan back to Italy may be better for him.
Also, I wanted to get your views, obviously, on what was a pretty horrific injury a few weeks ago for Andre Gomes. It kind of, a lot of people obviously have been wishing him all the best, and Marco Silva said he's not necessarily been ruled out for the whole season. It's maybe not quite as bad as first feared. Do you think that it, in what was obviously a horrible incident for Andre Gomes, being ruled out with a really bad injury for a sustained period of time, do you think actually in some ways that that's brought the club together in what's been not the easiest of starts for Everton at the start of this season?
I think it's united the fan base, so to speak. It was kind of split. But I think we've seen over the past few days that Everton have galvanised themselves in the performances, in the team spirit, and that's exactly what they've needed after a couple of tough results away from home, the likes of Bournemouth, Aston Villa, I could name quite a few this season. But it's kind of galvanised the club around amongst themselves at the moment. So it's not as if they feel victimised as such, but they have got the team spirit back amongst themselves, and it kind of shone through against Southampton last weekend.
And just finally, Tony, I wanted to get your views. I've seen over the last few days that obviously Everton have got plans in place for a new stadium at the Bramley Moor Dock Stadium, which could be a 52,000 capacity stadium. It seems like it is close, getting closer and closer to be given the green light. The club, I think I read, are hoping that they might move into it by 2023. Do the signs, what you're hearing, sound positive that Everton will get given the complete green light and will start work on that over these next couple of years?
Yes, well, from what I'm hearing, planning permission will go in the next 47 days. I think that's good news for, as far as Everton is concerned. We've ticked every single box. What you're looking for a major project like this, it's the biggest in the UK for the last 15 to 20 years. It's one of the biggest in Europe. It's a 52,000 capacity stadium on Liverpool waterfront. It's going to generate millions of jobs, thousands of income, and that's what that area is needed down in the Vauxhall area. So I think it's a fundamental issue that's needed addressing for a long while in terms of what the whole city has needed, a big, massive stadium. Everywhere knows Goodison Park is an old traditional footballing ground, but it's one that needed to end, to put it politely. And this is happening now, and I think it's beginning to dawn now, Everton fans, that and even for the away supporters coming to Goodison now, I think they'll be looking at it now as, do you know what, I fancy this away trip because it's not going to be no more, and long live the old football traditional grounds, and Goodison will be one of them.
Thank you very much for joining us this afternoon, Tony. That was Tony Scott, matchday digital reporter for the Liverpool Echo. Still does feel like there is plenty of pressure on Marco Silva. Anyone that knows me knows that I'm not a big fan of his. I don't particularly rate him, and I think he's actually, I think, quite lucky to get his to actually still have his job. They spent a huge amount of money. A lot of them have been waste of time signings. A lot of money wasted on a lot of players. And I think he's very fortunate still to have his job. But as Tony said, the nature of kind of from fifth place down to about 17th is that a couple of wins and you can move up about 10 places. It is a bit silly in the Premier League at the moment. Remember, if you want to get in contact with us this afternoon, call us on 0208 7020 558 or WhatsApp us on that very same number. We'll be continuing to look ahead to England's big game tonight. It's at Wembley against Montenegro, their 1,000th match. We'll be back after this.
Love Sport.
This is the Premier League Fan Show with me, Kieran Critchard, up until 2 o'clock this afternoon. Obviously, a significant game at Wembley. England are up against Montenegro. Obviously, 1 point away from qualification for next year's Euros, but also England's 1,000th game. Plenty of, well, highs and lows, whichever you want. Probably, depending on your generation, maybe more lows than highs. Maybe it is more highs than lows, but plenty of memories down the years. Obviously, here on Love Sport, we've been talking to a number of England players or former England players this morning. A lot of the former England players have been invited to Wembley tonight to celebrate this milestone for English football. And earlier on the breakfast show with Richard Lee and Patrick Christie, they were joined by the former England, Manchester City and Newcastle defender Steve Howie. And he was obviously looking ahead to England's 1,000th game against Montenegro tonight.
Yeah, I mean, look, Montenegro have kind of struggled, really, in the group. So you'd have thought that, you know, England should get the point needed. I mean, they have got, you know, some very good young kids and some lads that's been there for a couple of years now that have kind of grown into it now and feel really comfortable in the position of playing for England. So, you know, I mean, it's looking bright, but it would be nice just to see them on a special occasion like tonight to get the point needed just to send us through to the Euros qualification as qualified.
Yeah, I mean, what areas of this England team particularly excite you? Because, you know, I can remember watching teams line up in the past and being like, oh, gosh, there's a bit of a weakness there, or there's a weakness there. Is there an obvious weakness in this team for you? Is there an obvious real strength?
I wouldn't say obvious. I think it was, you know, we had to take notice of the fact that goals were conceded against Holland and Kosovo, and obviously two against the Czech Republic. Since then, obviously, we've played and it was a clean sheet, but I just think the manager probably has addressed the fact that, you know, whilst he wants his players to play out the back, I think it's only when it's you know, you can do it in a safe manner. Because obviously when you play against the top boys, if you give them half a chance and half a sniff of goal, they'll take it and score and obviously punish you. But I think the team in general is a very strong team. Some really good, you know, young lads coming through. But as I said, they've got that good blend of lads that's been in major competitions as well. So, you know, it's an exciting team. I think Gareth and his staff have done a fantastic job, and I just hope it continues where we can just push on, and eventually, over the next, you know, couple of tournaments that we play, we can actually manage to finish one of them off.
So let's have a quick whiz through. There's been 1,000 England games. What's been your best memory of this England national team?
Well, I think you've got to straight away say 66, and the World Cup and winning that. But I think from a personal point of view, it was the Euro 96 when I was involved in that. So, you know, the whole, it kind of, after a slow start, it eventually kind of gripped the nation and everybody got involved. Of course, again, everybody knows it kind of went out with a semi-final defeat against Germany with penalties. But I just think for that period of time, and especially being involved and lucky enough to be involved, that was just an amazing period for us in that competition.
Just going back, obviously we touched on the fact that you were involved in Gareth Southgate's debut back in December 95. Just interested to get a bit of background information on Gareth Southgate. We get this idea of him in the press, and in fairness, he's built a really good image, it's fair to say, certainly during the World Cup. I think, you know, he did himself a world of good, and since then hasn't really put a foot wrong. There's been a few people questioning his handling of this situation with Sterling, of course. But what are your thoughts on Gareth? You remember back then him making his debut. Did you always see that he would go into management?
I think it's difficult really to tell. I mean, obviously he was kind of very astute in everything that he wanted to do and how he handled himself in interviews and stuff like that. I think, you know, I mean, there were some players that on the training pitch and on the pitch they were pretty crazy, to be quite honest. And you never thought in a million years that they'd be managers, and yet they've turned out to be managers. So I don't think you can, you know, probably not a standout as though he would be manager. You probably thought that he would stay in the game in some capacity or other. But obviously, since he's made his debut, he's gone on from strength to strength. And of course, was given the opportunity initially at Middlesbrough to be manager. And he's took that run with it. And obviously, what he's doing now, in my personal opinion, I think he's doing a fabulous job.
What was he like when he first came into the dressing room? Was he quite quiet? Or you know, what's his character like when he was a player?
Quiet, but not like, you know, not what, you know, not stupid quiet. Obviously, if like anybody, you know, when you engage them, they'll have a conversation and stuff like that. But I mean, he was a nice lad. He was lovely lad, actually. And as I said, when I played with him, I realised how good of a player he actually was. I mean, you come across players when you play against them. And I knew he was a good player, but obviously when you get to play with somebody and in close quarters and train with them, I think you realise then that, you know, the qualities that they do have, and he certainly had a lot of them.
Just your thoughts as well on this Sterling Gomez fight or incident that obviously happened, the fact that he made it public. And, you know, we spoke a lot about these kind of things do happen in dressing rooms up and down the country all the time. We don't necessarily hear about a lot of them. Southgate's made the point that it's better to bring this out in the open effectively, and that pretty much set his stall out that players, there is a certain code of conduct that if you don't abide by it, then you will face the punishment, which of course Sterling is. Do you think he's done the right thing by allowing this to be public?
Look, I think it was going to get out regardless, and I think he was right in what he was saying, and I thought he was certainly correct in actually what he did. You know, these things have a habit of coming out, whether it's club level or whether it's international, they have a habit of coming out in some capacity. And then, of course, when the press and the media get a sniff of something, they go looking. And of course, I think because of that, he's obviously trying to nip it in the bud. And people will criticise him for sort of saying that he's Raheem Sterling's not going to play tonight. And I think the thing is for Gareth at this point, he's kind of damned if he does and damned if he doesn't. He obviously tried to build up a very good bond with all the players and class it as a family. And I think if you step out of the line, he has to come down on that. And I think if he didn't, then of course players would think, well, it's a bit of a slight on him. I mean, he's come out again and he's defended his decision. Look, some obviously we all know something happened, but I'm just thinking to what extent is it a little bit more than what we actually are led to believe. Mm-hmm. But the fact is, he's come out early, he's tried to nip it in the bud, he's given the punishment to the player, certainly involved more than the other one. And as always, as you do in football, when these things do happen, you get it sorted and you move on.
That was the former England, Manchester City and Newcastle defender Steve Howie, who joined Richard Lee and Patrick Christie's on The Breakfast Show. Remember, you can listen to Loveport Breakfast every weekday morning between 6.30 and 10 a.m. So make sure you're listening into that every weekday morning between 6.30 and 10 o'clock. Obviously, talking ahead of England's game tonight against Montenegro, and obviously with it being the 1,000th game for England, people often look back on these types of occasions, these milestone occasions, look back in the annals of history and wonder what the highs and lows, because as is with any sport, there are certainly highs and lows, and the lowest of the lows make sure that the highest of the highs are even greater. But the highest of the highs was quite a long time ago, well before the likes of myself. And so it leads you to think of England memories, good and bad. And if I'm being brutally honest, when I was thinking this up over the last couple of decades, coming up with a list of good memories is rather difficult. I'm not going to lie. And the list of bad memories wasn't very difficult to actually recall because there are so many. But if we think back to the good moments first, going back into the early 2000s when England won 5-1 away in Germany, arguably one of England's greatest ever nights. In a football context, and they were absolutely scintillating to rip apart Germany. There isn't a lot that's better than that in football, is there? So that's one of the real standouts from the last 50 years, but in particular in the last 20 years, it's one of probably very few good memories. Winning a penalty shootout, that was one of the positives that you can take from the 2018 World Cup. Obviously, England got to a semi-final. Some are cynical in the fact that England didn't have the hardest route to the semi-finals, but they still got there, and plenty of England teams before that who have been better have fallen way before the semi-final stage. But winning a penalty shootout was a great achievement. My producer today, Will, said David Beckham's free kick at Old Trafford in 2002 would have been against Greece. Was a pretty phenomenal effort for him. Thinking of bad moments, it doesn't take a lot of time to think of bad moments for England. And one of the ones that stands out to me was in the Euros in 2016, being knocked out by Iceland. Oh, my goodness me. The memories of that. And it got to a stage where it was one of those stages where, even though it was awful, it was quite comical how awful England were. And I think as England fans, we got to that point where it was kind of quite funny how rubbish at football England were. And that was during that stage where England fans just didn't enjoy England playing football, that it got to an international break and it was very much a case of, when does the Premier League come back? We don't like watching England. I think it has changed over the last couple of years. And Roy Hodgson's infamous interview after that defeat, I very much remember him walking in, sat, he plumped himself down and went, I don't really know what I'm doing here. And you're sort of thinking, if you don't understand why you're not sat there after losing to Iceland, a supermarket, then I think you have lost your head. So that was one of them. Frank Lampard's goal, or, well, it wasn't given, but it quite clearly was, against Germany in the 2010 World Cup in South Africa. England lost the game 4-1. That, if I'm right in saying, I think that would have made it 2-2 had the goal been given, which it should have done when it went about 2 yards over the line and then bounced out. But England disallowed a goal. Whether that would have changed the result, who knows? And then obviously Wally with the brolly. Steve McClaren against Croatia in the pouring rain, seeing England not qualify. I mean, the list goes on. And to be honest, if we did that, we'd probably be here this time next week. So probably not worth continuing on. Looking ahead then to tonight's game in terms of team selection, people have different opinions on what it is. As I mentioned earlier, kind of one of the general consensus is this probably is going to be England's lineup tonight. Pickford in goal, Alexander-Arnold, Stones, Maguire, Chilwell at the back, Winks, Rice and Mount across a midfield three, Sancho, Kane and Rashford up top. Remember, Jordan Henderson is suspended for tonight's game. Raheem Sterling, as we all know, has been dropped. In terms of, if it were me, if I were Gareth Southgate, or if Kieran Critchard's name was the one that is the manager, I would make a few adjustments to that team. In my opinion, I wouldn't have any doubt to pick Nick Pope ahead of Jordan Pickford. I don't get the hype around Pickford. His biggest strength is supposedly his distribution, and I don't see him doing that particularly well most of the time. And Pope is a much more reliable goalkeeper, a much more reliable shot stopper. And it's all well and good being able to distribute, but Pickford can't do that particularly well, and he is quite error-prone. So I would personally have Pope over Pickford every day of the week. In terms of the back four, I would have 100% Trent Alexander-Arnold, as everyone knows. Harry Maguire at centre-back, Ben Chilwell at left-back. There's no doubt about that. I would normally have Joe Gomez, but he hasn't played a lot of football. I rate him so highly, but he hasn't played a huge amount this season. So I would probably say Tyrone Mings, based on I thought he had a solid debut. I wasn't necessarily convinced about him being in the last England squad, but I thought he did a solid job. I think on a night like tonight, what an opportunity it'd be to play two attacking midfielders. I would normally go with Henderson, but he's suspended, obviously, so Declan Rice. And I would go Madison and Mount, or Madison and Oxlade-Chamberlain. That's the way I'd go. I understand that there's still qualification to be secured tonight, but for me, it's a no-brainer. I wouldn't go Winks. I think he's so overrated. And just some of these creative playmakers that England have, they need to take advantage. Up front, I think it's what we expected. Sancho, Kane, Rashford. So my team would be Pope, Trent Alexander-Arnold, Gomez or Mings, Maguire, Chilwell, Rice, Madison, and then either Mount or Oxlade-Chamberlain. Either one I'd be perfectly happy with. And then Rashford, Kane and Sancho. So a little bit different from Gareth Southgate, but I'm not the one paid to do it, and it's not on my head, be it, if England don't win tonight. Can you imagine the headlines if England did lose tonight? I'm sure they'd sell more papers if they did, but let's hope that they don't lose, and it's a comfortable win for England tonight.
This is Love Sport.